Hello everyone, welcome to JTalk Extra Time. I'm John Steele and my guest this week is a very familiar voice at this point, I hope. It's Mike Innes. Mike, how are you doing?
All good with me, John. Thanks very much. Good to be back chatting about J2.
Yeah, it's nice to be talking to you live, Mike. I hear your voice a lot in my headphones these days with the short corner segment on J3, so it's good to get you talking to me live, so we can actually ask and answer questions to each other. It's nice. Mike, lots to talk about as usual this week. For this section of the pod, we're going to focus on J2 and then a JTalk short corner is coming up at the end of the show for all the J3 news. So J2 is our focus for now. Round 10 took place over the weekend. Mike, I think it's fair to say not the most exciting round. Seemed like everybody was hungover from the sort of pretty crazy Wednesday night games in round 9. So do you have any opening comments for us on round 10 from the weekend?
Well, I think you've touched on the main point there, haven't you, John? I think that, you know, round 9 was what is technically known as an absolute belter, and round 10 was emphatically not. In sort of aesthetic terms, perhaps a little bit sort of tough going, really, this week, but still lots of points up for grabs and lots of action to talk about.
Yeah, I think that's a good comment. It seemed like everybody needed some time to catch their breath after the Wednesday night games. Like you said, I think round 9 was probably the best round of the season so far. So round 10, couldn't really hope to live up to that, and duly didn't. So yeah, in round 10 then, let's get into it, Mike. There was no change in the top 4 places in the league table. The top 3 teams all picked up 3 points. First place, Niigata, won away at Ehime fairly smoothly. It was a 2-0 win for Niigata, which ended Ehime's recent mini-revival in their 3-game unbeaten run. Niigata settled straight away in this game and went in front in the 12th minute when Kaito Taniguchi headed in Yuji Hoshi's cross from close range. Taniguchi's first goal for Niigata, I think, so he was very pleased with that one. And for the rest of the first half, it was all Niigata, wasn't it? Takahiro Ko had a goal-bound shot blocked by Ehime's Shigeru Yokotani, and Shion Honma, who we talk about very often and was just brilliant all day, he set up Hoshi inside the penalty area, but Hoshi blazed the ball over the crossbar. Should have done better. In the second half, Taniguchi nearly doubled Niigata's lead, but his shot was cleared off the line by Taishi Nishioka. Excellent defending from him. And then it was Niigata's turn to do some good defending. Fumiya Hayakawa did brilliantly to clear a right-wing cross from inside the 6-yard box when he was facing his own goal. There was some drama 6 minutes from the end when Niigata's sub Shunsuke Mito got sent off for his second yellow card. He'd only been on the pitch for about 15 minutes. His second yellow card was definitely justified. I didn't see his first though, so I'm not sure if that was justified or not. Can't comment, but yes, he had to walk. But Shion Honma sealed the win for Niigata right at the end with a brilliant solo goal in the 18th minute. I'm not even going to really try to describe this one, but it's definitely worth seeking out online. A fantastic goal from a fantastic player. So Niigata win 2-0 away at Ehime. 10 games unbeaten since the start of the season for Niigata. Another interesting stat, they've taken the lead in all 10 games so far. So nobody's managed to score first against Niigata yet. In second place, Ryukyu bounced back from that disappointing midweek defeat at Machida and beat Kofu 1-0 at home, although they needed a 90th minute goal from Ren Ikeda to grab all 3 points. Kofu started really well, and Ryukyu's usually impressive goalkeeper Junto Taguchi was a bit lucky to get away with fumbling the ball against the goalpost in the 10th minute. It was a fairly even and pretty low-key game after that, wasn't it, Mike? But there was some excitement in the 89th minute. Ryukyu's captain, Kazumasa Uesato, tried to chip the Kofu goalkeeper, Kosuke Okanishi, from just inside his own half. Okanishi was able to tip the ball over the crossbar, clattering into the post in the process and conceding a corner. From that corner, the ball was half cleared to Ikeda on the penalty spot, and he headed it in for the vital goal. It did look, though, on the replay like Ryukyu's centre-back, Ryohei Okazaki, was impeding the goalkeeper, Okanishi, I think, in a league that had VAR. That goal might well have been disallowed, but I don't think Ryukyu will mind too much about that. It's another win for them, 1-0, and another clean sheet. For Kofu, that was their first defeat in four matches and leaves them seventh in the table. So any comments, Mike? Ehime nil, Niigata 2, Ryukyu 1, Kofu nil.
Well, I think we can see from these two games little examples of why Niigata are top of the table and are looking really convincing. They really battered Ehime by the looks of the highlights here, didn't they? There were very few chances. It seemed to me for Ehime, despite their improvements over the last few games under the new coach. Very interesting to see Kaito Taniguchi get off the mark for Niigata. And also, we referred the other week, didn't we, John, to Koji Suzuki as a poacher. And I think I sort of said that maybe Taniguchi as a replacement for Suzuki, it's a bit of a mismatch, because Taniguchi's not that sort of player. But in fact, it was exactly that sort of goal that Taniguchi scores to open the scoring against Ehime. Maybe not the kind of goal that he would have got for Kumamoto last year, but a very nice finish nonetheless. They really dominated the game, but couldn't get a second goal until another piece of Shion Honma magic. After he'd at least twice set up great chances for teammates, you know, thanks to his skill and almost, one might almost say, generosity. There was a fantastic clear off the line by Taishi Nishioka, the Ehime defender, and that kept the score at 1-0 for a period. The red card, that you mentioned for Shunsuke Mito. The last time that we spoke about Shunsuke Mito, I think I compared him a little bit to Honma. And of course, Honma has got this sort of darker side, as it were, to his personality as well, hasn't he? Honma's been sent off. Has he been sent off twice in his career already? Something like that. It wasn't a dangerous tackle or anything, but it was certainly over enthusiastic and ill advised, and definitely worthy of a yellow card for him to get sent off. An interesting further point of comparison between the two players. But overall in this game, it felt as if Ehime just couldn't really live with Niigata generally, and with Honma in particular. The away team seemed like an absolute cut above, and Ehime kind of like stood no chance. With the Ryukyu game, I think you've already described it as low key, and I think that's a word that could get a bit of an airing in this episode. The most sort of interesting and exciting aspect of the game to me seemed to be that very, very kind of imaginative and long range effort by Uesato. Which Okanishi, you know, it was a real, real struggle for him to get to that one and to tip it round the post. And it was from the corner that Ryukyu scored the winning goal here. And I agree, it looked as if Okanishi, when he was jumping for to prevent the goal, as if he was stopped from doing so by Okazaki and his arm. Looked like quite an even game, and Ryukyu have ground out the win, but perhaps not too much to conclude within the grander scheme of things for either Ryukyu or Corfu from this game, because it looked slightly tired fare, perhaps after that busy midweek.
Yeah, fair enough. I think Ryukyu would probably just be happy to get the 3 points and bounce straight back from losing on Wednesday night. But yeah, the top two sides both winning, but in contrasting circumstances, as you said, Niigata kind of cruising to victory at Ehime. For Ryukyu, it was a much harder slog to get the win against Kofu, wasn't it? But yeah, they stay in the automatic promotion positions at the moment. Let's talk about Kyoto, Mike. They're the form team in the division, really, aren't they? They made it 5 straight wins by beating Yamaguchi 2-0 away from home. So yeah, Kyoto, 5 wins in a row. They've won all 5 of their April fixtures. So I assume Cho Kijei will be the manager of the month for April. Yamaguchi made 7 changes to their starting lineup for this game, which is a bit of a brave call when you're coming up against an in-form Kyoto side. I know they have Yuki Kusano, their striker, out injured, but still, the other 6 changes were on the brave side, I thought. Kyoto took the lead just before the half hour in this game. Great work from Peter Utaka out on the left when he produced a double touch to take him past his man, and then cross for Tenma Matsuda, the captain, to head in. And Kyoto went 2-0 up straight from the kickoff, really, in the second half. Kyoto had that second half kickoff and immediately launched an attack that led to a Peter Utaka shot. Yamaguchi's goalkeeper, Kentaro Seki, parried it straight to Takumi Miyoshi, who swept it in. That made it 2-0 and put Kyoto in total control of the match. Seki's opposite number, Tomoya Wakahara, made a good save from Ren Komatsu later on. And Utaka nearly scored a 3rd for Kyoto when he tried to chip Seki after Yamaguchi lost the ball near the halfway line. Seki got back in time, was able to slap the ball out for a corner kick, but was visibly annoyed with what he'd seen taking place in front of him. So Kyoto, 3rd place on 5 straight wins. Yamaguchi, 3rd bottom of the table after 10 rounds following this defeat. Moving on, Mike, Iwata are still 4th, but they lost 1-0 at the weekend away at Yamagata. This match produced a winning start for Yamagata's interim boss, Jin Sato, who's been placed in temporary charge after Kiyotaka Ishimaru's sacking at the tail end of last week. In this game, Kotaro Omori nearly put Iwata ahead in the 27th minute, but his shot hit the post. And 7 minutes after that, Yamagata took the lead. A low cross from Shintaro Kokubu evaded everybody in the penalty area, including Iwata's goalkeeper Ryuki Miura, and that left Atsutaka Nakamura with a tap-in from about 1 yard for his first goal of the season. The second half was pretty much all Iwata as they tried to force an equaliser. Kotaro Fujikawa somehow missed an open goal from about 2 yards out, with an incredible miss from him when Iwata were pressing for a leveller. And right at the death, Yamagata's goalkeeper Victor had to make a good save from Koki Ogawa to preserve his side's lead. So Iwata's run of 4 straight wins comes to an end. Yamagata win for just the second time this season. That lifts them up to 15th. What did you make of these games, Mike? So yes, Yamaguchi 0, Kyoto 2, Yamagata 1, Iwata 0.
I think the thing to do here is perhaps to try to make connections between these games and other games on the slate. So I think that the thing about the Kyoto and Yamaguchi game is perhaps to draw a comparison between this and the Niigata Ehime game. It didn't look quite as kind of, you know, as all encompassing in terms of Kyoto's superiority as we saw between Niigata and Ehime, but Kyoto certainly seemed like a cut above anything that Yamaguchi could deal with. And in the same way that Honma was illuminating Niigata's performance, inevitably Utaka did the same for Kyoto. I don't think that he really gets the credit that he deserves as a team player, as well as a goal scorer. I think that one of his strengths is his ability to make good decisions about whether to go for goal himself or to pass for a teammate. He's not a greedy player. I think his assist for the opening goal, when he was basically way out on the left flank, and he put in an absolutely brilliant cross for Tenma Matsuda to head in. It was a beautiful piece of work by Utaka, Although, let's observe that Daisuke Takagi's marking in aiming to prevent Matsuda hit it's absolutely abysmal. There's no two ways about it. And overall, Yamaguchi just weren't able to deal with the kind of incisive quality that Kyoto had in attack. And as you said, John, really the game was pretty much up right from the start in the second half. When Miyayoshi reacted to the loose ball after Utaka's shot was saved. Yes, both the goalkeepers did some good work after that, but you know, this was a pretty comfortable win by one of the division's strongest teams against one of the division's less strong teams. So yeah, a clear sort of like similarity between this and the Ehime against Niigata game. Going on to Iwata as the fourth placed team in the division. So yeah, they lost 1-0 to Yamagata, and the quality tails off here a little bit, doesn't it? In the last two rounds, I think we've talked about Masaya Matsumoto. He's been the assist king. I think he's had four assists in the last two games. But he put in a really misplaced pass to concede possession and enable the kind of setup for the goal. And although we've up to now considered Ryuki Miura as an upgrade in goal, and he certainly made some very good saves. I mean, he really did not do a good job dealing with Shintaro Pokubu's pass into the area, and Sutaka Nakamura seemed a bit too embarrassed to celebrate when he kind of just tucked it in at the far post. So, yeah, that wasn't really a thing of beauty. The goal. There were a lot of half chances for Iwata, especially in the second half. That miss by, I've got the words incredible miss as well in my notes, John. And indeed, they're dotted about my notes for this entire episode when it comes to Kotaro Fujikawa here. On another day, I've written Yamagata could have lost this 4-1. So in terms of the relegation battle, it might be a little bit too simple to say, oh yeah, Yamagata have kind of like turned it around off the back of this, because they, you know, they really did not look a good side. They really didn't look a good side. They might have won this game. They might have kept a clean sheet, but man, this was not a good performance. Iwata could easily have beaten them by a comfortable margin. I think that the save that Victor made in injury time to keep out Koki Ogawa's shot, that was probably the single sort of like high point of the match, really. And obviously, it helped his team get over the line. But that it's a significant result. But in terms of the performance, it's not a thing of beauty, this game.
Yeah, I wonder if Yamagata have already reached the point this early in the season where they just needed a win somehow. And I agree with you, I don't think the performance was particularly good, and they won't come up against defences as charitable as Iwata's on a weekly basis. But I think considering that they changed manager on Thursday last week, you know, they haven't appointed a new, you know, full-time permanent replacement yet. I think that was probably about as good a result as they could have hoped for, you know, a home win and a clean sheet for Iwata. They're still the side that you kind of can't work out. They score a lot of goals. They concede a lot of goals. They haven't drawn any games yet, have they, from the 10 rounds so far? So even though they're fourth place, they're in fourth place in the table, I'm still not sure what to make of them. And I think for the Kyoto game, again, it's difficult to draw conclusions because a very strong side fairly comfortably dispatched a much weaker one. So I think we'll have to wait for a few more games before we can make any pronouncements on Kyoto, you know, definitively, or Yamaguchi definitively. Mike, Machida Zelvia are up into fifth place in the standings. They made it three straight wins by winning 1-0 away at Omiya over the weekend. I thought Machida's former Omiya player, Ariyajasura Hasegawa, might have scored against his former employers. He didn't score, but he did have a chance as early as the fourth minute, which was blocked by Omiya's goalkeeper, Filipe Klajic. Hasegawa was involved in Machida's crucial goal in the 32nd minute, though, carrying the ball forward after Omiya had given it away, and then feeding Taiki Hirato, whose shot was very weakly parried by Klajic in the Omiya goal, and Yuki Nakashima was on hand to tuck in the loose ball to make it 1-0. Omiya should have been level early in the second half when Seiya Nakano produced a miss of a sort of Iwata proportions. He managed to hit the post from about a yard out after some great approach play from Masato Kojima. And the Machida goalkeeper, Koki Fukui, made a good save from a trademark pile driver from young Hiroya Matsumoto late on to preserve that 1-0 lead. So, yeah, it was a 1-0 victory for Machida. They were also boosted by having Dudu available again. He was on the bench for this game and came off to play a part close to the end. So, yeah, it finished Omiya 0, Machida 1. Omiya slumped to second bottom in the table with no wins from any of their last five games since beating Nagasaki 4-0. Three straight defeats for them now. And yeah, my question was, where do they go from here? But we can bring in a question from a listener, Connor, at this point, Mike. He asks, how worried should Omiya be? Playing badly is one thing, but having a lack of defensive shape or organisation is another. Huge gaps between the defence and the midfield and the back line. No shape or cohesion. He admits he's only watched the highlights. Don't worry, Connor. That's the same for me. And they create plenty of chances, but it's schoolboy stuff at the back. And it's pretty damning stuff, Mike. Do you want to comment on Omiya 0, Machida 1?
I agree with Connor's basic point. The organisation, particularly in the defence, does look indeed very poor. I also question the work rate. If you look closely at the goal and at the move which leads to the goal, you can see Yuki Nakashima, the Machida striker who ends up scoring, he's busting a gut to get himself into the area, while the Omiya right back, who would be the guy who's most obviously going to mark Nakashima in that circumstance, Masayuki Yamada, he's just sort of jogging back. And this was Yamada's first game of the season, and you wonder why the Omiya coach Ken Iwase is tinkering with the right-back position when Kazuaki Mawatari is one of the success stories of the team, certainly in terms of new players who came into the squad over the off-season. And Mawatari, he's clearly not injured. He's just not in the starting 11. He came on as a substitute in this game. And to the charge sheet, which Connor mentions, he's raising questions about the organisation. I'd also say, you know, you can talk about work rate and commitment. And the plain fact of the matter is that if you haven't got a team which is going to work as hard as the opposition, you're in real trouble. You're in real trouble. I mean, particularly in the defence. If you're not going to put the work in, then other teams, whether they're good teams, bad teams, average teams, you know, they're you're going to give them all a chance, and that's very distressing. And you wonder, you know, you wonder what's going on in terms of Iwase's ability to manage this aspect of the team's performance and to manage this aspect of the team's attitude. It's an incredible miss. Again, that phrase by Seiya Nakano. But I agree, broadly speaking, you know, this Omiya team does kind of like create chances, but Overall, in terms of trying to kind of like create a narrative for listeners to use to kind of follow the season. Thinking back to the point about big teams candidates for relegation, which we referred to in the original preview pods. Almia were regarded as potential candidates if kind of like if everything went wrong, and a quarter of the way through the season, they've won two games and they're second bottom, as you said. So and that's no accident. That's where they deserve to be at the moment. It's very frustrating because it would be ridiculous to suggest that this is the second worst squad in the division. They've clearly got some capable and skillful players. You just have to wonder what's going on with the management of the team. All credit to Machida. They didn't really have to look particularly brilliant. But Nakashima, a player that I've talked about before on the pod, he's impressing me a lot this season. He didn't have to do anything brilliant, but he worked. He got himself into the position, and he got his reward. And as a consequence, his team won the game.
Yeah, you think we should give Machida some credit. They do seem to be clicking into gear quite nicely, don't they? And obviously, Dudu's now being integrated into the squad after his quarantine has finished, or I think he was injured as well. And they still got Chongteze, on the fringe of the squad as well. They could be a team to kind of get higher than fifth, couldn't they? Based on the last couple of performances, I think Ken Iwase, Omiya manager, must be very nervously checking his phone whenever it rings to make sure it's not someone from the front office at this point. He does look, I mean, obviously Yamagata dispensed with their manager, Ehime fired their boss as well, didn't they, a few rounds ago. And I think squad rotation, he talked about the right back position and Mawatari. I sometimes think coaches are very influenced by what they see like big Spanish and Premier League teams do. And, big teams do rotate the squad when they've got the Champions League semi-final, coming up in midweek or something. But they're usually rotating out one sort of full international and replacing them with another. And I think that's usually not the case in J2. And sometimes managers end up rotating for the sake of it or because they think it's what good managers do. And there has to be a method, there has to be a reason for it. And I think, just wholesale changes just because you've had a midweek game do not make for a cohesive performance on the following weekend, and that was definitely evidenced here, wasn't it? I think Machida were worthy winners. So we'll have to wait to see what happens with Omiya, but the only way is up, I suppose. Let's talk about one more game before we take a quick break, Mike. 1-0 was a very popular scoreline, wasn't it, in round 10? We've talked about Ryukyu, Yamagata, and Machida winning 1-0 already. There was another 1-0 win, this time for Matsumoto at home to Gunma. Very important 3 points for them. The first half was goalless, although Matsumoto's goalkeeper, Tomohiko Maruyama, had to make a smart save from Junya Kato. Maruyama's opposite number, Keiki Shimizu, was almost embarrassed on the hour mark in this game when he was robbed by Toyofumi Sakano and then was forced into making a flying save from Kunitomo Suzuki, a striker who's bang in form. And then Matsumoto scored right at the death when a corner was only half cleared to the edge of the penalty area. It was fired back in. I didn't see by whom. And the Matsumoto defender Yuya Ono got the last touch onto the ball to take it into the back of the net. So Matsumoto won 1-0, their first win in 4 matches, and it comes after they posted an apology to their supporters for their bad start to the season on the official club website last week. With that win, Matsumoto are up to 17th, but Gunma are close by. They're on the same number of points, 10 points in 18th place. Montedio Yamagata and Sagamihara are also on 10 points. But for Gunma, it's 3 defeats in their last 4. And not the result they wanted from the trip to Matsumoto. What did you think, Mike? Matsumoto 1, Gunma 0.
Yeah, I think that we can draw comparisons here off the back of the midweek pod about round nine, where I spoke about these the idea of big teams going down, and I mentioned Ormia and the Yamagata and Matsumoto as potential candidates there. We've got Yamagata who've absolutely scraped out a 1-0 win. And Matsumoto have really done the same. It did not look like a good performance. And we've got this situation where there's basically a last minute deflected shot which has won them this game. So I'd be cautious about, I mean, better that than Ormia and obviously than and losing 1-0. But I'd be cautious about, regarding this kind of thing as a turnaround for Matsumoto, or indeed for Yamagata, because they just did not look like particularly sort of strong performances. So, yeah, these are still tough times for Matsumoto, as they are for Yamagata and for Ormia, and I'm sure that their supporters are as disappointed as we would be that their team is struggling so much to get a 1-0 win over one of the smallest clubs in the division such as Gunma. And when it comes to Gunma, I mean, I was quite sort of optimistic about their chances for the season in the preview pods, but I think it's worth just sort of mentioning about how clearly their kind of leading light, their star man, Ormai. He's really not having as much impact in 2021 as he did last season. He came, I think I'll be right in saying that he came closest to scoring for Gunma in this game, but he had a shot that was it saved or did it just go around the post? I can't remember. But yes, it was that sort of low curling shot. But he's really not having as much of an effect. And for a team like Gunma, who really do rely on him for the creation of their chances, and he's the person who provides the X factor for them, that little bit of unpredictability, imagination, a bit of flair, that is pretty bad news for them. But this is a game that's finished 1-0 for Matsumoto. It could have finished 0-0. It could have finished 1-0 for Gunma. Yeah. So we'll have to see how significant this is, come the end of the season. But 10 games in, let's not kid ourselves. Matsumoto, they're not a strong team. They're not a strong team.
Yeah, it's shaping up to be an absolutely fascinating kind of relegation dogfight, isn't it? With the four relegation places and one or two of the bigger teams, struggling. I think we expected Gunma potentially to be down there, Yamaguchi and Ehime, but yeah, Ormia, Matsumoto, Yamagata, all none of these sides looking too clever after the first sort of quarter of the season. So yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how it shakes out. Mike, thanks for the analysis so far. We're going to take a quick music and comfort break. When we come back, we're going to round up the rest of the round 10 action from the weekend. Welcome back, everyone. Mike and I are suitably refreshed, I think, so we'll wrap up the rest of the weekend round 10 action from J2. Mike, the kind of binary sequences continued, didn't they? Plenty of 1-0, 1-0 results. Another team that had a 1-0 win, this time away from home, were Sagamihara, who beat Jeff Chiba at Fukuda Denshi Arena. Sagamihara's first ever away win at J2 level, of course. It was actually Jeff who went closest to scoring in the first half when Shuhei Otsuki's shot was blocked by the Sagamihara goalkeeper Motoaki Miura at close range. The crucial goal came from a goalmouth scramble 7 minutes into the second period, though. A long throw from Sagamihara was inadvertently flicked on by a Chiba defender. Another Chiba defender completely missed his kick when trying to clear. That led to Romolo having a shot on the Jeff goal, which was saved by goalkeeper Shota Arai, but eventually the ball broke loose for the birthday boy Tatsuya Shirai to put the ball into the back of the net. So it finished Jeff Chiba 0, Sagamihara 1. Only Sagamihara's second win of the season, but it puts them in 16th place. Jeff end their three-match unbeaten run in disappointingly predictable fashion, Jeffing at home to a lower-ranked opponent. Other games to mention, there was a 1-0 home win for Akita. Mito were the visitors to Soyu Stadium. This time, the all-important goal came in the 20th minute here. Makoto Fukuin did well to wriggle into the penalty area and then cut the ball back for Ryota Nakamura to sweep in his first goal of the season. So 1-0 after about 20 minutes. Akita nearly grabbed a second just before half-time. It was a very windy afternoon at Soyu Stadium, and kind of long throw held up in the wind. That allowed Nakamura to kind of clip the ball to the far post, but it actually came back off the woodwork out to Taira Shige. He tried a kind of side-on bicycle kick from inside the six-yard box and should have scored, but again, incredible miss number three in my notes, Mike, because I'm sure it is in yours as well. So it finished Akita 1, Mito 0, a first win in 5 matches for Akita. It leaves them 8th in the standings. Mito have had 4 defeats in their last 5, and they're in 11th. We had an Akita question from our Akita correspondent, Mike Martin Spivey. He asks, what do we think of Akita's chances of making the top 10 this year? They don't concede many goals. They can nick wins, like they have done against Omiya, for example. He also wants to ask about attendances. The crowds have been a bit disappointing for Akita's home games so far this year, despite it being their first year in J2. So what do we think about that? How much do we think it can be put down to the pandemic? Any comments on Akita 1, Mito 0, or Jeff Chiba 0, Sagamihara 1?
So yeah, we've got a situation whereby the two new teams up from J3, excuse me, have both managed 1-0 wins in perhaps perhaps less than thrilling circumstances. Really, I mentioned earlier that we seem to be getting a lot of goals with deflected shots, and I knew that we weren't very far away from having a first mention of a goal mouth scramble as the other kind of main kind of possibility there. And indeed, we did get one in the Chiba Sagamihara game. It was Yushi Mizoguchi who didn't really cover himself in glory in the Chiba defence there. He kind of failed to make blocks, which enabled Sagamihara to get their goal there. It was a bit of a battle of set plays, really, wasn't it, this game? We got a brief opportunity to shine for Motoaki Miura. He wasn't called into action too much in this game, but he looks like a very key player for Sagamihara, their goalkeeper. In terms of Akita and Mito, so we've got Nakamura's first J2 goal. We've got incredible miss number three of the round by Taira Shige. We've got a pretty disappointing performance by Mito. They offered little threat and they didn't really ask any questions. Perhaps interesting to make a comparison between this game and Akita's previous win, the 1-0 game at home to Kyoto. So with that match, the Kyoto game, when Akita scored, you could be pretty confident as a spectator that Kyoto were going to put them under pressure and to ask some questions. And so, which is indeed what occurred. And so it was interesting because you could therefore see Akita being able to show off their best football. You could see them doing what they do well. Whereas in this game, Mito didn't. It was one of those off days for them, and they didn't offer that kind of a threat. So as a consequence, you never really saw Akita doing their stuff. With that, they didn't have that kind of chance to shine. So it was a game that rather kind of like it lacked a point of tension, which the Kyoto game definitely did not. So it was a bit less engaging as a spectacle as a consequence. In terms of Martin's question, I think he'd probably be better placed than we are. Certainly, I am to comment on the crowd figures. But in terms of whether Akita are well placed to get a top 10 finish, well, I think they've started the season relatively effectively. It would perhaps surprise me a little bit if going forward they had a run of form which was as good as the one that they have at the start of the season. I think that is there a chance that they can finish in the top 10? Yes, of course there is. But I think that that will be, if that occurs, that will be as much to do with the overall makeup of the division, and the fact that there aren't a lot of particularly strong teams. This is something which we've been referring to since since the previews. And also, I think that they may well end up being hamstrung by the fact that they just don't score that many goals. So there are, if you think back to previous examples, for example, from last season, say, with the number of teams who might have scored, the kind of number of goals that they look capable of scoring, and who finish in the top 10, well, really, you're looking at Tochigi from last season. So I think did Tochigi finish in the top 10? Perhaps they did. But I'm pretty sure that Tochigi scored less than a goal a game. And Akita, they have that they're scoring less than a goal a game. So it's not impossible. It does happen, but it's quite rare. So I think that we're going to have to see Akita kind of change the balance of their team, change the balance of their performances to increase the opportunity that they have to score more goals in order to enable that kind of final placing to become more likely. Let's put it like that.
Yeah, I don't think I can really add anything on the finishing position front. I think obviously going into the season, maybe fifth bottom would have been considered a successful campaign. But yeah, they're definitely well placed to go higher than that, aren't they? I think top 10 is possible, top half perhaps more likely, given their kind of goal scoring limitations. But yeah, I agree. I think unless Akita can just add a few more goals. Then they're always running the risk of, having too many draws or, being hit with a sucker punch and losing a low scoring game as well. So yeah, for me, top half, I'd be a lot more confident predicting than top 10. But yeah, it's definitely possible if they can be a bit more expansive and add a few more goals. On the attendances, I mean, they did get a crowd of a sort of 3,000 for the first home game, didn't they? So that shows that the potential's there. I think they're probably a little bit hamstrung by Akita being a very northern part of Japan, so it's colder for longer. They're just coming into spring now. Kind of I think the weather's improving now. They obviously don't have that many large away followings visiting because of the coronavirus, kind of impacting on that. So I think there's definitely the potential for them to get 3,000 crowds on a more regular basis, but. This season, with it being their first in J2, might be a kind of fact-finding thing. They can see what other clubs do. When they go away to other teams, their club staff go and see what other teams do at their home games. Maybe they'll be able to boost attendances for next year. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see. But I expect attendances will go up as the weather improves. But the thing that will really add to the attendances is probably. A lot of more goals and exciting football. So if they can probably kill two birds with one stone and maybe get into the top 10 and attract more supporters to come and watch if they can do those things. So that's quite a generic answer, Martin. Sorry, but yeah, I don't know the specifics of Akita, but yeah, definitely warm weather and goals are probably the combination that would be the best fit in that department. Okay, Mike, let's round up the rest of the action from the weekend. Action in inverted commas, I suppose. As you mentioned, wasn't the best set of games quality wise, was it? Fagiano Okayama finally picked up a home win, beating Kita Kyushu 1-0 in their match. Okayama started this game like a freight train and had lots of chances in the first quarter. And their goal came in the 25th minute when rookie Takaya Kimura was able to convert a low cross from Ryosuke Kawano. Kita Kyushu's best chance came towards the end of the first half, but Daigo Takashi's goal-bound shot was inadvertently blocked by his teammate, Takamitsu Tomiyama. Okayama had the chance to extend their lead 20 minutes from time, but Satoki Uejo's effort hit the crossbar, and a follow-up from another Okayama player was cleared off the line by a perfectly placed defender. So it finished Okayama 1, Kita Kyushu 0. Okayama's first win in 5 matches, their 12th in the table. Kita Kyushu are bottom of the standings after 10 rounds on 8 points, level with Omiya. 2 games in round 10 finished as 1-1 draws, including Nagasaki at home to Tokyo Verdy. Nagasaki went in front in this one just before the half hour when Kaio Cesar fired into the far corner from just inside the penalty area. 2 goals in 2 games for him after the cracker that he scored against Yamagata in midweek. Verdy threatened at the start of the second half, though. Junki Koike almost got on the end of a Ryoya Yamashita cross. This made me think of Paul Gascoigne at Euro 96 in the semi-final against Germany, but obviously I'm over that, so we don't need to go into it here. But the chance went away. Koike did get his goal to equalise for Verdy in the 57th minute, though. A header from a corner kick hit Kaio Cesar in the chest, and before he could react, it had dropped nicely for Koike, who rifled in his 7th goal of the season into the roof of the net. We should note, Nagasaki's goalkeeper in this game, Masaya Tomizawa, was making his first appearance of the season, but I don't think anybody would have been able to stop Koike's shot. So Nagasaki won, Tokyo Verdy won the final score. That's 1 defeat in 5 for Nagasaki, who are in 9th place, whereas for Verdy, they're in 14th. No wins for them in their last 3. And finally, the other one-all draw was at Kanazawa. Kana's home game against Tochigi finished 1-1. Very entertaining match. Kanazawa nearly went in front inside the first minute here. The impressive Shintaro Shimada sent in a curling shot that the visiting goalkeeper Shuhei Kawata tipped onto the post. It was 1-0 to Kanazawa in the 37th minute, though. A lovely backheel from Yuji Senuma sent Shion Niwa free. He carried the ball to the edge of the penalty area and somehow kind of poked it past Kawata to score his 4th goal of the season. Tochigi, as they do, kept plugging away. They had a few chances in the second half. They eventually equalised in the 73rd minute. A long throw caused some confusion in the Kanazawa penalty area. Hashtag goalmouth scramble, I suppose. And the ball eventually fell to Ren Yamamoto, who fired an unstoppable shot past Masaaki Goto in the Kanazawa goal. So it finished Kanazawa 1, Tochigi 1. Kanazawa still looking pretty good in 6th place in the table, whereas Tochigi are 10th, and they're on a 7-match unbeaten run at the moment. They had 3 straight wins that have been followed up by 4 consecutive draws. So yeah, good month and a half for Tochigi. Just some related Tochigi news. They've announced that they've cancelled the contract of their veteran striker Sergio Escudero. The official reason given on the club website is for acts that disturb the order of the club, which is suitably nebulous to make you believe there must be more to it than that. But yeah, we'll wait to see the details. But yeah, no more Sergio Escudero at Tochigi. But he hasn't made any appearances this season, so perhaps not a player that they were counting on. Mike, any comments on these matches? So Okayama 1, Kita Kyushu 0. Nagasaki 1, Tokyo Verdy 1, Kanazawa 1, Tochigi 1.
In terms of the theme of the pod, let's pause very briefly to observe that Kita Kyushu looked abysmal in their game at Okayama, but I've included the phrase unexpectedly good goal by Okayama, which is a welcome sight, isn't it? So that was a goal which it involved neither Satoku Uejo, or a set play, which I'd previously identified as being Okayama's only two routes to goal. I thought this was a really cracking goal. The run by Ryosuke Kawano to kind of like set things up, and the cross in for Takuya Kimura. Kimura did a great job to beat his man, and a really tremendous low shot, a very nice finish. And Kitakyushu, Takahashi, that was easily their best chance, but he hit his own player. Okayama get the win. Kitakyushu are bottom of the standings. So with Nagasaki and Verdy, Kaio Cesar spotted an opportunity to score from a loose ball. You know, very kind of like incisive play to put Nagasaki in the lead. I thought that the run that by Ryoya Yamashita to set up that Koike chance, that was you know, really thrilling and aggressive play by the Verdy winger, and it would have been great to see that result in a goal as an exciting bit of play. When Koike scored the equaliser, no goalkeeper could have stopped that one. That was good. So we had you know, several exciting moments in that match to enjoy, there were two good moments as well in the Kanazawa Tochigi game. That brilliant curling shot by Shintaro Shimada. Right inside the first 30 seconds. That was a tremendous shot and a brilliant save also by Shuhei Kawata. Two superb pieces of skill to illuminate the early stages of that game. I thought that with Niwa's goal, it doesn't feel like the sort of goal that that he normally scores. I don't know if you've got any pictures of this in your Shion Niwa sort of shrine, John. You can describe that in some detail when I've finished. I don't really associate him with, you know, runs from inside the centre circle, but he did indeed sort of poke the ball inside the post for a very tidy goal. But then inevitably for Tochigi, that, you know, they are a very hard working team. As I mentioned in the midweek pod, it feels as if they're now back into the groove of last year, where they've made themselves, you know, they're a difficult proposition to play against, and for teams to beat, as they demonstrated in midweek. You know, they came within a whisker of beating Niigata in midweek, and sure enough, they kind of like they kept plugging away, and any description of their goal has to include both set play and goal mouth scramble, you know, inevitably. There we are. So, that's pretty much where we finish our roundup of the round 10 games, isn't it, John? You know, perhaps perhaps not the best of weeks, but some in terms of quality and in terms of goal action. But there were some good moments to enjoy, and you know, for example, for Okayama, 3 points is 3 points.
Yeah, I think it's true, and I think we're here on you know, JTET Rain or Shine, aren't we? We're here for the non-stop bangers of the midweek round, and we're here for the kind of bangerless rounds like last weekend as well. To be honest, though, I do kind of enjoy a kind of quick lull, you know, a lull in the schedule when there are not so many goals, because you do sometimes notice different things about players in some of these kind of more slow-paced matches. And I mean, Shion Niwa are probably a good example. I think my shrine has been downgraded now. I'm sure Kanazawa Dreaming's probably got a larger collection of Shion Niwa merchandise adorning his walls at the moment. But it was a kind of a weird goal, because firstly, Yuji Senuma, kind of the pirouette back heel to set up the chance. It wasn't something that he did regularly when he played for Yokohama FC, and I used to watch him close up, if I can put it that way. So that goal had me leaning forward and rubbing my eyes, because the Yuji Senuma assist and then Shion Niwa just kind of poking the ball inside the post the way he did, Yeah, let's just say if Neymar had scored that goal, a lot more people would have probably seen it on YouTube. But all good stuff. And yeah, I think it was around where a lot of players and a lot of podcasters could catch their breath a little bit. So thanks for all the insight, Mike's always much appreciated. Nice again to talk to you. I think we stretched listeners' patience with a couple of solo pods, didn't we, last week? It was just me for 20 minutes. And then just yourself for 20 minutes. So it's good to get the band back together this week. Before I let you go, let's look forward to the round 11 games that are coming up this weekend. It's especially exciting because it's the start of the Golden Week holiday period, so there'll be another round of midweek games coming up in J2 next Wednesday. So with that in mind, most of the round 11 games are on Saturday, the 1st of May. Leaders at Niigata host Jeff Chiba, and second place Ryukyu are away at Sagamihara, with a third place Kyoto rather ominously hosting Ehime at Sanga Stadium. I believe that game will be behind closed doors because Kyoto is one of the four prefectures under a new state of emergency. I'm not 100% sure, but I think that game will be with no supporters in the stadium. Other matches on the Saturday slate: Akita against Okayama, Gunma against Yamagata, Kofu host Kanazawa, Iwata host Tochigi, and Kitakyushu host Matsumoto in a basement battle that less generous podcast hosts might make fun of and say it's Dortmund-Liverpool. But I think that should be a really interesting and exciting game, Kitakyushu against Matsumoto. On Sunday, most of the action is in the Kanto region. Mito host Nagasaki. Tokyo Verde host Omiya, and it's Machida against Yamaguchi. And yes, the Tokyo Verde game against Omiya and Machida against Yamaguchi, they'll both also be played behind closed doors, what the J League calls a remote match, because of the coronavirus restrictions that are in place at the moment. Mike, are there any games that you leap out at you on the round 11 schedule?
Well, before I mention that, I'll pause to observe that although remote match is the sort of Japanese term for the rather clumsy English expression behind closed doors, in Dutch I understand that this is referred to as a spook duel, which is a phrase that I like very much. Moving very swiftly on. Sorry about that, John. I think that, everybody associated with, in terms of the Saturday games, everybody associated with Ehime FC must be pretty furious with the J-League for their scheduling, so that they've got to go to Kyoto. I think approaching this task slightly out of left field, I'll go for Gunma against Yamagata. I think that's a pretty big game. We can get a sense of, have Yamagata actually got some kind of improvement or new manager / caretaker manager bounce about them. That looks like a really big and important game to me, in the same way perhaps as the Kitakyushu Matsumoto game. I think that Sagamihara and Ryukyu might also be pretty interesting. Sagamihara, they're tricky opponents, and I think it might test the idea that maybe Ryukyu are not perhaps playing so quite as well as they were earlier in the season. So that could be a pretty interesting game. I think with the Sunday games. The one which catches my eye most of all is probably actually at Machida. Machida against Yamaguchi, because on paper you would expect that to be a home win, a comfortable home win. Machida are improving. Their results are getting better. They've moved up into fifth place. If they want to go, higher than that, if they want to challenge for promotion, if they want to close any gaps, that's the sort of game that they've got to win. So I think that is maybe the most interesting of the Sunday games.
You've set it up nicely, yes, and I think Machida would be looking to make it four straight wins, wouldn't they, against Yamaguchi? So they'd be highly delighted if they can get four wins on the spin. Is there any chance that if Omiya lose away at Tokyo Verde that we see Ken Iwase being fired, or is it still too early, do you think, or any thoughts on that?
I think that I don't detect that amongst the support things have changed quite to that extent. And when I think back to previous circumstances in which Omiya have sacked their coach kind of like, mid-season on account of poor performances, there tends to be a bit of a developing narrative. And things also tend to come to a head at a home game. So, and as you've already described, John, there won't be any supporters at this match, and it's at Ajinomoto as well. It's an away game for Omiya. So on the basis of the way that the club tend to do things, I would be a little bit surprised if Iwase gets his cards after this particular game. But clearly Yamagata in not dissimilar circumstances have made that kind of decision already. It has to be a possibility. It's a bit of a disastrous start to the season for Omiya. It's one to watch with interest, but I just don't find this particular circumstances of the away game against Verdi behind closed doors, that doesn't seem to me to be how the club do things. But these are very strange times, aren't they? So we'll see.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I realise I sound really bloodthirsty. I don't want anybody to lose their job. I just think with Yamagata sacking Ishimura, I wonder if that might kind of open up. I think reading between the lines, that might be why Matsumoto put out that kind of apology on their website, because something that tends to happen is when one club near the bottom fires a manager, other clubs feel pressure to kind of react to that. Whether that's in the form of, putting an apology on the website or following suit and second their manager too. But to be honest, I get the same feeling. I think Mr. Iwase is probably safe until mid-season. Actually, I don't imagine Omiya making a change until at least when J2 takes a short break for the Olympics, assuming that they go ahead. So yeah, plenty to look forward to this weekend, and hopefully there's going to be more goals and more goal mouth action than there was in round 10. But Mike, thanks for the contributions and the analysis. It's always great to talk, and it's much appreciated. And thanks as always to the listeners. If you download, listen to the podcast, or you support the JTalk podcast on Patreon, we really appreciate that. And please stay tuned, because I think, Mike, you're going to be, thanks to the magic of editing, you're going to be back with the JTalk short corner, all of the J3 news and updates in a moment. So yeah, please stick around for that. But goodbye from me for now, and we'll speak to you again soon. Enjoy your football. Take care. Bye. J-Talk
Extra Time. Hello everyone, and welcome to J-Talk Short Corner, the mini pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J-League. I'm your host, Mike Innes. And in this episode, I'll be looking back on matches in round 6 of the league season and previewing games coming up in round 7. Straight into the action this time, with all the round 6 games played on Sunday the 25th of April. The postponement of Iwate Gurugia Morioka's scheduled match at Fukushima United meant the winners of Katare Toyama versus FC Gifu were well placed to go top of the table. Toyama duly got themselves in front in the 34th minute when Gifu midfielder Takuya Honda clumsily handled the ball in the box. Yohei Ono's spot kick gave Kazushige Kirihata no chance.
Trying to find a way back into the game, Gifu brought on ex-Urawa Red star Yosuke Kashiwagi for his first appearance, but Kashiwagi's impact was negligible. The closest the match came to a second goal was Shaw Hanai's 73rd minute shot, a 20-yard curler after typically good work by Nobuyuki Shina. But Kirihata saved well, and it finished Toyama 1, Gifu 0. A disappointing way for Gifu to lose their unbeaten record, while Katare are quickly learning to play to their strengths and look like serious contenders. There was also the possibility for Tegevajaro Miyazaki to go top if they could win the Kyushu Derby at Kagoshima United. Again, though, the home side got off to an excellent start, when in only the third minute they were able to draw Miyazaki out of defence and hit them on the counter, long ball specialist Fogechi freeing up Junya Nodake to get round the back and cross from the right to Yusei Kayanuma, who had time and space to shoot past Shunsuke Ueda. For those listeners missing the roar of a football crowd, it was, as Kagoshima took the lead, palpable. Tegevajaro worked hard to get back on level terms, creating multiple chances, but they were unable to get past Shogo Onishi. Keigo Hashimoto's poked shot, after he got on the end of a long free kick, Kosuke Fujioka's angled drive from the corner of the area, an attempted lob by Yudai Tokunaga, all good opportunities, all snuffed out by the Kagoshima keeper. Arthur Pappas's side almost extended their lead in the 72nd minute when top scorer Rei Yonezawa got on the end of a cross from the right-hand side, but his attempt was blocked at close range by substitute Ikuru Aoyama, and a hard-fought, high-quality match concluded Kagoshima 1, Miyazaki 0. As with the J2 matches discussed in JTET with Jovial John Steele, goals were in short supply in J3, but an exception came at the Egao Kenko Stadium, where Roasso Kumamoto took on Vanrare Hachinohe. There was good news on the team sheet for Hachinohe, whose captain Shochi Niyama started his first game of the season after being out through injury. But the match didn't begin so well for Niyama's team. In the 14th minute, a looping Saw Kawahara corner was headed back across goal by big Kumamoto defender Masahiro Sugata for Hayato Asakawa to nod in from close range, a third goal of the season for Asakawa, who took advantage of a static Hachinohe back line. Just 6 minutes later, it was 2-0, Kumamoto putting together a delightful, intricate team move down the right-hand side, Tomoya Kitamura and Naohiro Sugiyama both making important contributions before Wataru Iwashita knocked it over the line. A highlight of this or any week, and a perfect example of the quality that can be found in this division. In the final quarter, though, Kumamoto keeper Yuya Sato stamped his mark on the game for all the wrong reasons. With 72 minutes on the clock, he misjudged the flight of a corner, allowing Yosuke Kamigata to bundle the ball in. Then, in injury time, Sato dashed off his line when he had no realistic chance of winning a high ball into the box. Sugata did get his head to it, but with Sato having removed himself from the game, there was no one to stop Vanrare substitute Satoru Maruoka from following up to head home the second ball. And so it ended, Kumamoto 2, Hachinohe 2. Points dropped by the home team entirely as a consequence of avoidable errors, but credit to Vanrare for capitalising and earning themselves the draw. There was a big game at Gainare Tottori, where the underachieving home side were looking to pick up points against bottom-of-the-table Kamatamari Sanuki. This was the first match in charge for Sanuki coach Zdravko Zemunovic, who switched to a more attacking system that found room in the starting lineup for last season's top scorer Kentaro Shigematsu, Mark Ajay Kurita and Shunta Nakamura. Ex-Kitakyushu goalkeeper Takuya Takahashi recovered from injury to make his debut, and if that wasn't change enough, Zemunovic also introduced a three-at-the-back defensive setup. The only goal of the game came early in the second half, a long ball from Tottori left-back Takuya Fujiwara, enabling Yu Okubo to find a hole in the defence via a clever flick over the head of hapless Senuki skipper Akira Takeuchi, leaving Takeru Kiyonaga to hammer a volley past Takahashi from 10 yards. Senuki did fight back and created a number of half chances, most notably a Shigematsu header just off target from a cross by tricky substitute winger Yuga Watanabe, but the match ended Tottori 1, Senuki 0. Much needed points for Gainare after losing their previous three games. Some positive signs for Kamatamari, but the Zemunovic era commences with no goals and no points. Round 6 concluded with a pair of 1-1 draws. Azul Claro Numazu hosted Fujieda Mai FC in a Shizuoka derby. Numazu almost going in front early on as a lofted Tatsuya Anzai ball caused panic in the Fujieda defence, but centre-back Takashi Akiyama was just able to hook it away. The home team had the better of things in the first half, but didn't go in front until the 65th minute, when a Junya Takahashi cross was handled by Mai FC sub Masahiro Nasukawa, and Takahashi himself converted the penalty. Fujieda's first sniff of a goal didn't come until 12 minutes from time, Jun Suzuki swinging in a corner which eluded the Azul Claro defence and found Yuki Oshitani at the far post to score his first for the club. Seconds later, Oshitani, through on goal, was brought down by Numazu captain Takuya Sugai, perhaps harshly adjudged a professional foul for which Sugai received a second yellow card. The resulting Suzuki free kick hit the bar, but 10-man Azul Claro still had a chance to win it, Junya Takahashi heading just over with the last action of the match. Finally, with both in the bottom three at the start of play, FC Imabari's draw with YSCC Yokohama does neither much good, although they still produced a lively-looking game. Both had excellent chances to score before YSCC broke the deadlock in the 35th minute via a speedy counter-attack. Yutaro Yanagi raced upfield and fed Yuta Sato, whose shot was blocked, only for the inrushing Akio Yoshida to blast home from 10 yards. Further opportunities followed, and I sense YSCC's rookie forward Charles Nduka may be puzzled as to how he managed not to end up on the winning team, but Imabari tied things up with 3 minutes remaining, Takuya Sonoda's hooked cross being scrambled over the line by substitute striker Valdemar, making his J-League debut. A quick reminder that the game between Fukushima United and Iwate Gurugia Morioka was postponed, while the team with a bye this round were AC Nagano Paseiro. So what does all this mean for the current league table? Top of the pile after round 6 are Toyama with 13 points from 6 games, then Iwate with 11 from 5, Gifu with 10 from 5, and Miyazaki with 10 from 6. At the bottom, in 12th position are Fukushima with 5 points from 5 games, then it's Imabari with 4 from 5, YSCC with 3 from 6, and Senuki yet to get off the mark after 5 games. A number of listeners have been kind enough to send in questions about matters J3, which in this section of the pod I'll do my best to answer. Firstly, questions about particular clubs. Marco4J says, I follow Vanrare and have been pleasantly surprised with their start. Gifu, I expected more of. Am I off the mark with either sentiment? While Kanazawa Dreamin's focus of attention is the current leaders of the division. Do you think Toyama are the real deal this year, he asks, or will they fall away? In looking at teams as the season progresses, I'm hoping for a level of consistent performance and evidence there's some notable strength in at least one area of the squad. With Toyama, their consistency of performance could be better, but it's okay. They got 4 points from not great displays against Senuki, Fukushima and Miyazaki, and they can improve as the team settles down, bearing in mind there's a new coach and a lot of changes to the squad. Toyama's attack gives them options, including physical strength, other teams at this level don't have. There's a dynamism and aggression about forward players like Ono, Yoshihira and Otoizumi, which is tough for J3 defences, especially with Hanai and Shina backing them up in the attacking midfield roles. Gifu have played one game fewer, so at this early point in the season, there's a bit less to go on. You can say roughly similar things about them as about Toyama. Their consistency could be better. Under-par performances against Hachinohe, Tottori and Toyama, from which they got 4 points. A new coach for the season. A fair amount of changeover among the players. Again, they can improve their overall level of performance as Anma's methods become more established. Gifu's attack is of a high standard, but is based more on a single individual, Shota Kawanishi. Their defence looks more solid than Toyama's, but so far they've played against some of the less good attacking teams. Overall, I don't think there will be many teams stronger than Toyama this year, and Gifu definitely have the potential to be contenders, but they need Kawanishi to stay fit. Hachinohe have achieved some encouraging results, like away draws against Gifu, Nagano and now Kumamoto. The games they've lost have been against Toyama, who have that strength and energy teams like Hachinohe can only dream of, and Iwate, who blew them away in the second half, but this was a game in which two Vanrare players picked up injuries that likely will keep them out for the season, so you can see why their teammates would have been knocked off their stride by such setbacks. I do think they've had a decent start, but Hachinohe might struggle to win games, which is why home fixtures against teams in the lower half of the table, such as this coming weekend against Tottori, are very important for their season. Also, on a related subject, Ormia supporter Jackie Boy asks, thinking Ardija will be in J3 next season? For the time being, that's more of a J-Talk extra time question, one which John and I addressed in this week's episode. But the basic point is that 4 relegation spots in the higher division greatly increases the chance of one or more bigger clubs ending up in J3 2022. Early evidence is that Ormia are sufficiently badly run to get sucked in, but especially in J2, there's a long way to go. Elsewhere, Gary Irwin inquires, who are the best 3 goalkeepers in J3? Far be it from me to speculate why someone who watches Roasso Kumamoto might be interested in this topic, but based on performances so far this season, I'll offer these suggestions in no particular order, and to follow, 2 alternatives who just missed the cut. My top 3 are Kohei Doi, 32 now, and the long-standing first choice at Iwate Gurugia Morioka. Ryosuke Sagawa, who's 27 and has been in and out of the team at YSCC Yokohama over the last couple of years. And at Azul Claro Numazu, Ryusuke Otomo. He's not quite 21 and this year is playing first team football for the first time after having started his career at Montedio Yamagata. Just outside my top 3 are rookie Soki Yatagai at AC Nagano Paseiro, 21 and fresh out of university. And lastly, Tegevajaro Miyazaki's Shunsuke Ueda, who at 33 has had a career spent mostly in regional league football. Thank you to everyone who submitted a question. I hope I've done each one justice. Just time now for a brief look ahead to matches in round 7, with 2 games on Saturday the 1st of May and the others scheduled for Sunday the 2nd. The Saturday fixtures see leaders Toyama go to Fujieda and bottom side Senuki continue the quest for their first points of the season at home to miserly Numazu. Then on Sunday, the remaining unbeaten teams are both at home, Iwate against Kagoshima and Nagano against Fukushima. There's a Takeshi Oki derby with his last employers Gifu at home to current club Kumamoto. The J-League's 2 newest members meet for the first time in J3 as Miyazaki host Imabari. Both teams will fancy their chances of picking up points at Hachinohe, who, as mentioned, are visited by Tottori. The team with a bye this time are YSCC, who return to action against Miyazaki 2 weeks on Sunday when J3 reconvenes after a break in the schedule. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say, thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.